This is ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. This is 2 hours of sports talk like none other. Footnotes with the man who speaks his own language.
Me fail English? That's impossible.
Your host, Kevin Foote.
Welcome into Footnotes. You are listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette, 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana Sports Station, broadcasting live from the EFCO Development Studios in Upper Lafayette. And give us a call on the Mike's Marine Hotline at 337-706-0111. Brought to you by Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water. I give you the number, but I can just tell you that the 10 o'clock hour is the hour you want to call in. We will have we're going to be out at UL tomorrow. Kind of a live UL kind of special, very similar to what they did in Baton Rouge last week on RP3 D'Lo and Mesh show. And so today we're going to be talking with Koki. We normally talk to him on Wednesday, but because we're going to be out at UL tomorrow, we are going to be talking to Koki, and then we're going to talk to St. Edmund head coach, who also happens to be the head coach of the Voodoo. And we all got news last week that there's going to be a new indoor football team in Lafayette starting Saturday. And so we're going to get some details from Coach Shiver about that. And so, yeah, the 10 o'clock hour will be the hour to call in if you would like to call in on the Mike's Marine hotline. Hey, I guess we all can kind of judge our misery on others, or compare our misery on others. If you're a Pell fan, the game one loss was rough. It was. Should have won the game. But I don't know that. I'd still rather be in a situation the Pels are in terms of the frustration meter than to be in the situation that the Laker fans are in and that Sixer fans are in. I mean, the Knicks, the little Knicks cheated the Sixers last night. That's pitiful. And really, like, if I'm a Knicks fan, obviously you're happy because you haven't won in a long time and you won two playoff games. But, man, the Sixers should have won both games, and the Sixers just look better. And their best players hurt on one leg, and they just look better than – they've played better than the Knicks. They should be up 2-0. Now, obviously, a lot of controversy. And I just – look, I've been a proponent for years of using common sense in sports when it comes to officiating. And they just – can someone explain to me, especially in the playoff? I mean, to me it could be done all the time. We're talking about the NBA. This isn't like – Pecan Island versus E. Broussard high school basketball in the 70s. This is the NBA. So why is it that we don't have a system where someone, an official, is at the scores table? Because there seems to be one anyway. Why do we have a system where it's up to the officials on the floor who are watching 10 players to call timeout? All you got to do is have someone an official at the scores table. You call timeout to him and you stop the clock. Like, this isn't rocket science. It's obvious that the Sixers called timeout. Now, I don't know why they didn't give it to him. Maybe they cheated. Maybe they were just distracted. I mean, again, it's all it stuff can get chaotic during a game. You're not always paying attention to the coach. But it'd be real easy for someone who's sitting there on the scores table to do it, or wherever you want to put them. Like, this is, we should not be deciding playoff games because you have officials in the building who are essentially doing nothing that could be doing something. It's not, the official score could do it if you didn't want it to. Like, this is not hard. Why do we have a system where you can call timeout and it not be granted to you? That should never happen. That is just awful. Obviously, there were multiple fouls committed. They didn't do anything about that either. That was bad. I tried but couldn't do it. I tried to stay up for the end of the Lakers-Nuggets game. I was just too tired. I made it to the fourth quarter. I think when I finally just kept, I kept dozing off and kept dozing, and I'd wake up and I'd doze off and I'd wake up. And finally, I just said, I just can't do it. So I finally went to bed. I woke up. As soon as I woke up this morning, I looked at my phone. I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me. When I went to bed, again, people, first of all, people make way too big a deal. A 20-point lead in the NBA is big, but it's really not what people think it is. It's not. Like, so the Lakers are up 20 in the third. By the time I went to, when I finally gave up, I think they were up 8 early in the fourth quarter. Like, that's nothing. That's nothing. 8 points early in the fourth quarter. That's not a big lead. So, you know, and then I saw, you know, the replay where, again, it's one thing to make a bad foul call, but how in the world can you replay it when the guy's arm is across the guy's face and say no? Especially when you just had a playoff game with the Pels where there wasn't even any physical contact in the last 2 or 3 minutes of a game, and they gave an and-one call. There was literally not any physical contact between the two bodies. Not even close. And they called a foul. And again, we're not talking about coming up with some complicated system. This is easy. Easy to fix. All right, let's head out to the Mike's Marine hotline. Mike's Marine keeping you on the water. All right. So, you know, again, great drama for those two NBA games. But, again, if you're a Sixer fan, that's worse than being a Pel fan right now, to be a Sixer fan. All right, let's try it one more time. Mike's Marine keeping you on the water.
Kevin.
Yes, sir.
How you doing today?
Oh, I'm a little tired.
Yeah, me too, man. It was rough. I didn't go to bed until almost 3 o'clock after that junk. That was terrible.
I bet.
Like I told you yesterday, man, we'd have had a chance to win the game, and what I say it came to fruition, with Russell had to hit a couple of threes, at least 4. What happened? He hit 7. I mean, but the thing is, they do this all the time. Now, there's no way you dominate a game like that and control it, and then the last quarter and a couple of minutes of the game, you kind of start playing the hold on. It's no way in hell, okay? It's no way Davis get 30 points in the first half. In the second half, you totally don't get the ball. Now, it's not all his fault. Okay. It's
now he took one shot in the fourth quarter. Why did he take just one shot in the fourth quarter? Why?
That's terrible stuff, man. And like I said, it's not all his fault because players got to know he's rolling tonight. Joker can't stop him. He can't guard him. You don't have the foot speed. They did not make an effort to get the ball in his hands. And you got to demand the ball also. You can't just sit back and watch things go down and you're supposed to be a star guy. You're supposed to say, look, I want the ball. I've been rolling. I want the ball. He can't guard me. But you just sit back and
you're watching things. But that's what I'm saying. That doesn't make any sense. Like, whether you're LeBron or whether you're AD or whether you're the head coach, we're like, that can't happen under any circumstances.
Exactly.
So you got to fix it.
That's what I was going to get to. A lot of that goes to coaching, too. A coach like I say, with some pedigree and with some brains would have sit down and let that happen. No way. He'd have made sure Davis got the ball and get back in the rhythm.
But that's not on the
rhythm.
It's on the coach. But LeBron is the most seasoned basketball player in the history of the sport.
He's
essentially the point guard. Though, he has got to make that happen. That's on LeBron.
Yeah, it's on him too. But the thing is, though, Kevin, he can't do everything, and he's getting tired. He's getting tired. So when he's tired, he makes a little bit – his decision-making is a little bit less efficient
Just throw him the ball. You know, how complicated is this?
But understand, he was getting him the ball and picking rolls and stuff. He tried it a couple of times in the second half, but Denver kind of took it away. But there's other guys on the ball, on the team that controls the ball too, like Austin Reeves and D'Angelo Russell, supposed to be a point guard. You make sure your big man get the ball, Cat. Don't leave it all up to LeBron. So I say to leave everything up to LeBron. Everything is LeBron, LeBron, LeBron. LeBron can't do everything every time.
Well, no, but he's got to be the one to say, look, guys.
Have brains also.
Yeah, but when.
You can't have one guy on the team with brains. D'Angelo Russell, you're a point guard. You're the number one pick for being a point guard and a playmaker. So you get the ball to your big guy, Cat, some kind of way. Like I said, if you see LeBron's kind of coasting and drifting, he's getting tired. His legs are starting to go. So you're supposed to know this already. If you got brains, you went to Ohio State. Okay?
Yeah, but
so
that,
you're supposed
that's
to know
LeBron.
This already. You get him the ball. You
LeBron's know, kind of the leader
like said, all day
when they when
not
they
all
have the little
demand the ball
no.
more also.
No, no question. But you know that's not his temperament. Anyway, I appreciate the call. I know it's a rough one. But look, when you have your little meet, you know, a little 3-second meet, I mean you together on a court during it. You know, during any, you got to just say, look, we got to get AD the ball. Like, they haven't, he had 32 points. It's not just that he had 32 points through three quarters. He had 32 points on like 14 out of 18 shooting. It was unbelievable the first three quarters he had. So you got to make it happen. Again, you only got five guys on the court. It's not that difficult. Now, I'm not saying he's going to continue. He didn't have to score 50, but how could he just take one shot in an entire 12-minute period? I don't even know how that's possible. Don't even know how that's possible, really. That's craziness. So, but look, I don't – obviously the Lakers should have, could have, would have won that game last night. I really don't think they can win 4 out of 7, even if they win last night. So that is a rough loss because if you're the Lakers, you've lost like 10 in a row to them and you're tired of losing to the Nuggets. I get that. But I don't really think they were going to win the series, even if they won that game last night. I really don't think so. Now, the Sixers, again, they've outplayed. Like, they look like the better team. And they've just... Well, I'm not going to say they botched the first one. They just had a player in Hard who's not even a three-point shooter knock down 2 threes down this stretch. And if he don't do that, I mean, sometimes you got to just say, you know, good job. I mean, he's not a great shooter, but he made 2 shots. But then last night, that was just a fiasco. That was the reverse of the Reggie Miller stuff from 30 years ago, almost 30 years ago. That would, you know, it was a combination of, ironically, Celtic leprechaun luck is how the Knicks and cheating. They picked the Celtic way to be up 2-0, the Knicks. They acted like the Celtics, cheating and luck. That's the only explanation for the Knicks being up 2-0. All right, we'll take a timeout, shift gears to LSU baseball with Koki Riley next. Stay tuned.
Go sign up for our rewards club at ESPNSouthwestLouisiana.com. so you can score tickets, gift certificates, and much more. This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Welcome back. You are listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette, 1041 Lake Charles. We, as I said, moved up our friend Cokie Riley from The Advocate up one day, and he is here. How are you, sir?
Doing great. How's it going?
Well, if the Astros won a game, I'd be better, but we won't discuss that right now. You know, we kind of thought LSU would win the series, and they did. I don't know that they won in the fashion that convinced anyone that anything has gotten much better, but the bottom line is they did win a series. And, you know, Auburn is not a, you know, they're in the bottom, near the bottom of the standings as well, but their RPI is still pretty good. So I still think they're on track to do what they need to do if they can win two more series. What do you make of all that?
Yeah, this is a must-win series for them. I don't think there's any question about that. Because after this, it gets a little bit tougher with Texas A&M. They're the number one team in the country. They're coming here next weekend, after this upcoming weekend. And then it's at Alabama in a crucial series on the road. And then it's Ole Miss to finish out the season at home, which that's also going to be a huge series. If both teams are kind of near the cut line for the NCAA tournament by that point, which could happen, at least could happen, depending on what happens this weekend with LSU. And obviously what happens with Ole Miss moving forward. Those are huge games. And, you know, they had to win the series this weekend. They did. They're now at, 5-14 in conference play. And, you know, like, they're still, if the season ended today, they'd still miss the SEC tournament. But if they win the series, they'll go a long way in helping them not face that fate. So, yeah, this is. I mean, every weekend's gonna be like a playoff series from this point out, and it's just, you know, they're gonna have to win this series. I don't think there's any two ways about it, especially given, you know, again, how the schedule gets tougher from here on out.
So, did anything happen in the Missouri series that made you other, obviously the wins, and you got two wins, but did anything happen that makes you think that things could be heading in a different direction? Or was it just they played, they got two wins, and that was it?
I think Nia Ackenhausen having another solid Sunday start kind of shows that maybe they have somewhat figured out their Sunday problem. I think, you know, pairing him next to Griffin Herring creates a really nice combination on a Sunday to close out that extra win. And the fact that you did get a lights-out performance from one of your starters was huge. The fact that you played much better complementary baseball on Sunday and Friday at the very least was pretty huge. Saturday, you had issues with some control. I think they hit four batters in that game. Luke Holman was not at his best. The bullpen was not at their best either. A lot of inherent, Aiden Moss gave up a good amount of inherent runners to score. Michael Buckingham gave up a homer in the eighth inning that proved to be crucial. There were definitely some ups and downs, but at the same time, like, enough good stuff happened, like, you know, much better two-out hitting, much better hitting with runners in scoring position, driving the ball, especially out to that right field alley at Missouri. Enough good things happened to where you could definitely make a strong case that this was a very productive weekend for them. Just from, like, watching the games and seeing how their performance could translate into, you know, more good performances moving forward.
All right. So I want to get back to what you mentioned about the SEC? I know, you know, you'll want to make the SEC tournament. You kind of assume every year that you're gonna. But in the SEC, you know, people make the tournament without being in the tournament. So how important is it to make the SEC tournament? And could it actually, like, if you're not going to host, could it actually help you to not make the SEC tournament?
I don't see how they make the tournament if they I don't see how they make the NCAA tournament if they don't, if they miss the SEC tournament, because they kind of need to get the 13 wins in conference play, something like that, something along the lines of that. The 2021 team won 13 conference games and snuck into the NCAA tournament. And that might not be like a clincher for them, but it'll get them close. The Ole Miss team that won the national title 2 years ago, they won 14 games in conference play, and they were the last team into the field. So 13 isn't a guarantee. I just think it's kind of a good marker for roughly what you need to do to get in, or be in contention to get in, I should say. And they have a realistic path to 13. Even if it's, even if, you know, I think a sweep this weekend would have helped that substantially, but, you know, didn't get that. And they just need to win at least one game against A&M. They need to probably win. They need to win the series against Alabama. They need to win the series against Ole Miss, and they need to win this weekend series, which, again, none of that's impossible. On paper, they can win three of these next four series. It's just a matter of, you know, can they, like, really turn it around that quickly? I mean, we'll see. It's going to be really interesting to see how, again, all of this plays out. And you probably, and I think you probably need to win one game in the SEC, at least one game in the SEC tournament, because if you get eliminated on that first day, then you're really putting your fate up to the hands of other teams, and that's not what you want to be doing that early in the week, right? So then you're just biting your nails for the entire weekend just to hope that there aren't too many bid stealers or whatnot. But if you win a game, it puts an extra SC win on your resume, and you get thrown into the double elimination portion of the tournament where – there's just a lot more room for error for you over the rest of the week.
I mean, all of that makes sense. But if let's just say, and we're just speculating here, obviously, but let's just say LSU wins one game in every series the rest of the way. You don't think their RPI is still going to be in the 40s?
I don't know. I mean, right now their RPI is somewhere in the 40s, but say they won one game. It kind of depends who the one games are against, right? Like,
no, if you won one game in every series, in other words, you lost every series, but you beat Alabama once, you beat A&M once, you beat Ole Miss once, and you beat Auburn once, I still think your RPI is going to be in the 40s.
Yeah, but I don't think they would get into the tournament because they would have what? Like, they have 9 SEC wins? I don't see how that gets them in. And then that maybe still gets them into the SEC tournament. That wouldn't shock me. I don't know. That would be close. But I just think they're going to have to win more of these series, and they're going to have to, you know, just be more competitive and close. And again, like, we're speculating here, but a lot of this, the reason why I'm kind of outlining this the way I am is because it's going to depend on what the other teams around the country are doing as well. So, they're going to have to do more than just win a game each way. And even if the RPI, in their RPI right now, I believe, is in the 40s. I haven't checked since this past weekend. But, you know, they still have a lot of work to do.
All right. So what is there any concerns about Auburn, or is it just about, you know, playing decent baseball? Or what could Auburn – Where could Auburn give them some trouble?
Yeah, I mean, the top of Auburn's lineup is pretty veteran-laden, pretty strong. They have some dangerous hitters. But that's kind of where it ends because their pitching has been kind of a disaster this season. But again, a lot of this has to do with the schedule. Like, they've had the toughest schedule in probably the country. Good team after good team, week after week. A&M on the road. I mean, you name it, A&M on the road, Tennessee, really every good team in the conference they've played against already this year. So I that's probably the strongest argument for them is just based on that. But overall, I think that LSU should win this series. They're home. They have more talent top to bottom. If they can keep down Auburn's, the top of Auburn's lineup, which won't be easy, especially in a smaller ballpark, but which the one that LSU, which is obviously the box, then, you know, I think they can win this series.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens. I think that the LSU fan base is many of them have kind of resigned themselves to the fact, that it may not happen, but we'll see how the impact that they can make in this series, and really they might need it to win this series.
Yeah. No, yeah, I think you're absolutely right in that. It seems like there is this air of, well, the season's over with some of the fan base. I've been saying this very specifically with the fan base, not with the team. So I would disagree with that because of, again, the outline that I've put out there, the fact that, and the point that you made, the fact that they're still, in the top 15 in the RPI, despite all of these losses. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that they're also 20-3 in non-conference play. And if they beat Nicholls, that would be another solid non-conference. That would actually be a decent non-conference win because Nicholls is one of the better teams in that conference. So I look at all that and I say, I think it's possible. But again, like the margin of error could be really thin moving from here on out. Like they can't get swept by Texas A&M. Like they have to win a game in that series. And because that would be huge. I mean, they're the number one team in the country. That would definitely help them. The schedule has gotten easier, will be easier for them moving forward, which is definitely helpful. But, you know, they have to keep on playing solid baseball.
All righty, sir. We appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Look, LSU's 39 right now in the RPI. They got to play Alabama, who's 20 in the RPI, A&M, who's number one in the RPI, and Auburn is 44. But
Cookie's right. If they win 9 conference games and don't make the SEC tournament, they're not getting into the NCAA tournament, no matter if the RPI is 35 or not, I promise.
Telling me no one who's has never gotten in,
who has a 9-21 conference record, I don't know if any team who's won,
who's not made the SEC tournament has made the tournament.
I'm saying with 9 conference wins, like he said, if you get to 12 or 13, the committee, that stuff matters to them. They've said that plenty of times before. If they win 9 conference
games, they're
going to
leave out
games,
a defending national champion with an RPI in the 30s or 40s.
If they have 9 conference wins, yes.
We'll see. All right, we'll be back.
The biggest headlines in the world of sports are discussed here. ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Welcome back. You are listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette, 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station, broadcasting live from the EFCO Development Studios in Upper Lafayette. And give us a call on the Mike's Marine Hotline, 337-706-0111. Brought to you by Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water. All right, so we just talked to Cokie, and Dawson agrees with Cokie that they're going to have to win a certain amount of SEC games, and it's not going to matter what the RPI is. Again, the whole RPI thing, if it doesn't matter, then why do we talk about it?
It's a metric. I mean, how is this? I don't understand. It's like you've never done this before. I'm confused why.
No, but it's just like, why?
It is another piece of data that's used. The Cajuns' RPI was 48. There were tons of teams that had better RPIs than them last year, but the committee saw that they had 40 wins. They had the big-time wins against Coastal at the end of the year. They had an overall resume and a strength of schedule that was inside the top 40. So a good enough RPI combined with those other metrics. But their RPI was not as good as Georgia's last year, who was awful in the SEC, but won a bunch of, you know, had an RPI booster because of the conference they played in.
So they know the RPI is flawed, but they still use it to keep some people out.
There is no metric that's perfect in any way. I mean, there's no way you're going to come up with a flawless system to rank teams. It's just, if everybody played everybody, then maybe you'd be able to do that.
Right.
But they're already fighting a losing battle.
That's fair. All right, let's head out to the Mike's Marine Hotline. Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water.
Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, sir.
I'm glad I got in because, number one, I want to tell you, there's several things I want to talk to you about. Number one, you started off the show yelling and screaming about basketball. Kevin, you gave up on basketball.
No. I'm not yelling about basketball. I'm yelling about leagues not getting the enforcement of the rules properly. That is basic. That should never happen.
No, it's the stupidest thing ever. You watch the thing and the guy, it is stupid, but I have to say.
It's so easy to fix. Anyway, go ahead.
It doesn't make any sense. I mean, listen, I'm not a Lakers fan, and I know you're really not a fan of basketball.
No.
You know, like LeBron on the interview is like, he just, you know, I don't understand it. He says, you know, you go in and you take the foul away. I mean,
that is insane.
It's almost criminal. I mean, it makes you think something. It's very suspect.
Yeah.
I just don't. Okay, so that's good. I digress. Okay, another thing, Kevin. They will not get in at 9-21. No way, shape, nor form. Or this ain't going to be close. You got to have 12 wins. And they need to go, I mean, 13 is almost a guarantee to me. And, you know, if you get 12 and you go to the tournament and you win, you know, a game, I think 13 is the magic number. But no, I 100% agree with Dawson. RPI is a metric. It's one of the things they use, like you said, about the Cajuns last year. Same thing. So I say no. I mean, I think they'll definitely leave them out. Especially if you win one series and you end the season losing your last four series. No, I mean, of course, they cannot lose this series against Auburn. I mean, you basically need a sweep. They needed a sweep last weekend. They should have. That's what you got to be shooting for, because it's highly likely that you could get swept against A&M. At best, you're probably going to get one. Alabama on the road, very iffy. Ole Miss is LSU and Ole Miss. So, yeah, I mean, a sweep would be very advantageous. And last, Kevin, there's going to be, once again, I've been fascinated by all this draft talk by your experts the last couple of weeks, things we don't figure in. Premium positions, like, you know, say the needs are safety, receiver, you know, you talked about all that. That's very interesting, very cool to me. And I don't see any scenario where, of course, we don't know what the Saints draft board looks like, where one of the four or five tackles.
Well, yeah. Look, I don't think there's any way four tackles are being taken. I do think it's possible that three tackles will be taken, and it just depends on how
it depends on how
they're ranked.
Yeah, if you look at whether it's Penn State guy, Alt is almost unanimously number one. And then you got Oregon State, you got Penn State, you got the Washington guy, you got Latham. So, you know, you don't know. I mean, a couple of those guys are almost assuredly going to play right tackle. And then it's probably only three or four maybe that are going to assuredly be left tackle. So, you know, that if you're looking at that scenario, that, you know, that makes sense. If you think you have to have a left tackle. If you're just thinking, I need a good tackle, then I definitely think they're going to be. And I don't think Bowers is going to be the 100% like you. I don't think I could pass him up. And then you just try to get your right tackle or service, a tackle in the second round. And also, Kevin, you ended last Friday screaming about the draft. They played the little excerpt all weekend. I laughed all weekend. just don't have a bust in the first thing. Your boy Dawson, man.
It shouldn't be that difficult. I don't need I don't have to have great players. I just don't draft a bust. If they don't draft a bust, they win the division 2 years ago and last year. Has nothing to do with how much of an idiot Dennis Allen is, or he's the worst press conference guy ever. Even if you think Derek Carr is bad, if they just don't, if Peyton Turner's not a bust and Trevor Penning's not a bust, they win division both years.
You are correct, Kevin. They definitely don't. We can't have a bust in the first.
It cannot be a bust. All right. Thanks, Manny.
All right. Y'all have a good.
All right. Let's do this, because we had to shift some things around with our second guest, which is not a big deal. Let's go ahead. Let's take the timeout right now, because I want to follow up on what he was just talking about, the tackles, and our conversation from yesterday, because I think it all depends on these trades, and I'll tell you why. Next, we'll take a timeout and be back.
You're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. Your home for the Houston Astros.
All right, before we go any further, what is our poll question of the day, sir?
Yeah, a couple teams, few of them actually, falling behind 2-0 in the NBA playoffs. So we're asking, who's in the most trouble? Is it the Magic, is it the 76ers, or is it the Lakers in their respective first-round series?
The Magic. It's amazing how many people don't, if you ask them, are the Magic in the playoff, they'd have to think.
Well, the Magic have been pretty good, and I think the Magic were actually, in a lot of people's minds, favorites in the series against Cleveland, but hasn't played out that way.
Okay, so the Lakers, the Magic, and what's the third one?
The Sixers.
Oh, the Sixers, I think, are in the least trouble. The Lakers are in the most trouble because there's no way they're going to win 4 games out of 5 against the Nuggets. Don't you think?
Yeah, no, I pretty much agree with that.
I mean, the Lakers were in trouble when they made the mistake of beating the Pels. I mean, they should have never done that if they were really serious about making the finals.
I'm not gonna argue with you, but everyone knows how I feel about the statement you just made.
Yes, I understand. But you have to admit that the Pels are better off losing.
How? The fact that the Lakers have had double-digit leads comfortably in the second half and just completely blown both these games, they were in great position. They were fine.
I think the Pels match up better with the Thunder than they do the Nuggets, is my point. I'm talking about the Pels, and I'm talking about the
Pels
Lakers.
Pels played pretty well against Denver this season. They played awfully against the Thunder. I don't know about that. I really don't. Now, again, I get the playoff experience of it matters. Last night, it mattered a lot. Yes. Jamal Murray looked pretty comfortable with the game on the line. But,
and by the way, and I'm going to talk about this and get back to what we were talking about. I have no problem people criticizing AD. I've heard people being critical. Why didn't he block the guy's shot? That was not a shot that he was going to block. Like, that's going too far in being critical about him because he didn't block that shot falling away. You know, I think that's a little too much. But anyway, all right. We mentioned what I want to do, and we won't really do it as much tomorrow probably because we're going to be at UL talking tomorrow. It's kind of a special UL show tomorrow, but between Thursday, which is draft day, and today, I don't want to do a whole mock draft. I just want to try us to, just up until the Saints, to try to figure this out. And I said that I put pen to paper last week and kind of did one, but when I do it, I typically don't do trades because you know there's probably going to be some trades. But at least the first one that I do, I try to do it without trades just to see what we're looking at. But I think it's very different when you do a trade. Even if you just do one trade. And what I mean by that is, let's say the most popular trade guess is the Vikings going from 11 to 4. If the Vikings go 11-4. That changes everything in terms of if there's versus no trade at all. If the Vikings go from 11-4 and pick, theoretically they're doing it to pick J.J. McCarthy. I mean, we don't know that for a fact, but that's what most people are suggesting, that if they trade from 11-4, they're doing it to draft a quarterback. So that would mean the first four picks are quarterbacks. So theoretically, let's say, if you hear something that you think I'm off base on, just tell me. Theoretically, if that happens, then Marvin Harrison's going to go 5 to the Chargers. Theoretically. And then that would mean the Giants didn't trade up for their quarterback, so they would pick Malik Nabers at 6. If we continue to think that at 7, Joe Alt is going to the Titans, which just about everybody who does a mock has Joe Alt going to the Titans, at that point, you still have the third wide receiver available and all the tackles other than Alt. I think the Falcons are going to pick Dallas Turner, but the Falcons are kind of the Falcons have been a toy organization of late. Are they going to pick Adunze? I mean, would they pick a wide receiver there? It seemed like they would need defense there.
Yeah, I can't imagine the Falcons taking another skill player based on the ones that they have that they don't use now. You know what I mean? And a
right.
New regime coming in probably saying, let's use the toys that we
coach.
Do have before we buy new ones.
Right. And a defensive coach is your head coach. So you agree with Dallas Turner as a guess there, or you have another guess?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a shot they go offensive line, but I would think defense is the safer assumption.
So at that point, if the next pick is the Bears. So are the Bears going to not pick a tackle to support their rookie quarterback?
They could go receiver, though.
They could go and cause, try, because they already have.
And again, look, their offensive line has issues, but there were games where it was okay last year. But they have a real deficiency, I think, in getting Caleb Williams some help on the outside past, number one on their roster.
Well, DJ Moore.
Yeah, I know. They have DJ Moore. That's what I meant by number one.
They just
one,
traded for the Chargers guy.
I guess I'm forgetting that stuff, too. You're right. Okay.
I'm just saying they have two above-average receivers.
The most dangerous part of the offseason for me right now is that stuff right there, forgetting about little moves, which, some of them aren't little moves. But the Mike Williams deal the other day, I remember, Mike Williams, I got to remember that he's not there anymore and all that stuff. So, that makes them more likely to go.
Right, so the Bears and the Jets, that's 9-10. Bears and Jets both have two really good receivers now after the offseason moves. So do we really believe that to me they're both going to take tackles to support the young quarterback and the old quarterback as opposed to adding I'm not saying a third really good receiver won't help them, but I'm saying are they really going to pad to get a third receiver or a tight end? Which is he's essentially a receiver. Are they really going to do that and pass on their wide? I mean, we don't know that. We're guessing, but I don't think they will. So I think I still think the two tackles are going to be there. But that means now you've gotten to 11 with the Cardinals. If you buy the Cardinals trade, the Cardinals, I don't know that they're going to pick a receiver. Because their two big draft needs, theoretically, are pass rush and cornerback. So they might pick Quinyon Mitchell or Arnold there. What I'm saying is it's possible, if their trades happen, that a third wide receiver could be there when the Saints pick. Or am I dreaming here? All right. I'm just setting that up. We got to take a timeout. We'll get back to this later. We'll be back.
This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. This is 2 hours of sports talk like none other. Footnotes with the man who speaks his own language.
Me fail English? That's impossible.
Your host, Kevin Foot.
Welcome back. You are listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette, 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station, broadcasting live from the EFCO Development Studios in Upper Lafayette. You can give us a call on the Mike's Marine hotline, 706-0111, brought to you by Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water starting in the next segment. Right now, we have with us Coach James Shiver, who's the head coach of St. Edmund, and also the head coach of the Voodoo indoor football team that begins play Blackham Coliseum in Lafayette on Saturday. How are you, Coach?
Hey, Kevin. Doing good, man. Doing
man, great. Is your head spinning these days?
Yeah, we've been real busy. It's been spinning. Yeah, but between Grandparents' Day this morning at school and what's going on with the Voodoo, everything's it's crazy.
All right, so just give us an idea. Like, 3 weeks ago or a month ago, did you think that y'all would be playing in Lake Charles, and when did it kind of start to shift a little bit?
I thought we were playing in Lake Charles all the way until last Thursday. Last Thursday, I was on the way to practice, got a phone call from the ownership group, and they said, hey, guys, how's everything going? And I just said, well, it's going great. You know, we were living at the Horseshoe Casino, practicing over there. So it was going great. I mean, the team was living there. I was still living in Eunice, driving back and forth to practice. But I said, it's going great. I gave them all the details. And they said, well, listen, tomorrow morning you're going to check out when they check out, and you guys are moving to Lafayette. And that was it. So I just got the details then that everything was going to happen in Lafayette. Now, all along, they were going to play two games in Lafayette in June. So we had known we were going to play eventually, you know, in Lafayette a couple games, but we didn't know the whole season was going to be going there.
All right. So, does it make a big difference preparation-wise, one for the other? Or is it kind of just all the same in terms of the football preparation part of it?
Well, Kevin, so what I did we went out and got the team, Chris Hempel is our head of player personnel. And whenever we went out and recruited the players and got them, we went out and got veterans, and we, just very professional veteran guys who can handle anything. You know, most of our guys played in the USFL last year, our XFL, and our UFL players. And so we went out and got those guys who, prepared for anything. And so whenever I told them, there wasn't a blink of the eye. Everybody was like, hey, we'll see y'all. What time is check-in in Lafayette? So it was no problem with us. I mean, the football side was great. Logistics side was more than anything, we were getting ready to have a game the next week in Lake Charles, this week in Lake Charles, and now we're having it in Lafayette. So it was just moving, getting the AstroTurf set up, and getting everything set up and everything else, which is still in process.
All right, so let's take another step back here. For those like me who were not all that familiar with all of this, how does one like yourself, explain to us how you got the job? I mean, it's very interesting to me. Like, how did all this happen?
Yes, sir. Well, after my days of playing, I was a raging Cajun back in the 90s. After my days of playing, I went around and tried to continue my career any way I could. And so I got caught up in the indoor arena leagues, and I played those for, about 2 or 3 years. And then when I was going to hang it up, I got married. You know how it is whenever you getting ready to move on with your life. And so I had a child at that time. In fact, I had two children at that time, and one of them was having open heart surgery. And we got through that. And then after all that happened, I got a phone call from a team, and I went to it, and I just wasn't into playing anymore. And so I said, look, I just want y'all to release me. I'm going to quit. And the head coach talked me into coaching football. And so I did an indoor stint as an offensive coordinator for 6 years. And then I went as a head coach to Montgomery, Alabama. And then in about 2006, I decided I was going to give it all up, and I was just going to come home and coach high school football. And so I did that, and then I went on and got my master's degree so I could be an administrator and all that kind of thing, all that stuff. And so while I was doing that, I came back to St. Edmund, my hometown. This is where I graduated from, and I'm here. I love being a Blue Jay. And then all of a sudden, I get a phone call from this group that's bringing the Arena Football League to Louisiana. And they said, listen, we got your name from some people. They said that you would be the guy to talk to I listened to everything they had to say, and then they said, my last child is graduating this year from Sacred Heart in Ville Platte, and she's going to play basketball at LSUE, and so I live here in Eunice. It just made sense for me. I said, look, you know, I put my career on pause in 2006, and I just kind of picked it back up right here, and you know, it's been a good thing. I mean, I always knew what the Arena Football League was. It's been around for 33 years, off and on, and so I just jumped back into it.
All righty. So in terms of, like, the actual football side of it, if there's someone that has watched football their whole life but they've never watched indoor arena football, like, and they're intrigued because this team is now in Lafayette, like, what would you tell them to, like, about the game that's different that they might actually enjoy even more?
Well, I explained to them that it's a faster-paced game. There's a lot of scoring in arena football. One thing about the Arena Football League is the patented net system in the back of the end zones. You kick off of it. As it goes through the uprights when they kick off, it's a deuce. You get 2 points. If you kick it into the net and it bounces around, they can't run it out of the end zone. It's a rouge rule for you. You get a point. So there's a lot of cool little – it's almost like the difference between baseball and softball. So you guys that have a girl or a granddaughter or a daughter softball to me is a lot faster paced than baseball. And it's got a couple of quirky rules that make it a little different than baseball, especially, running the bases and things like that. So, and it's a way faster game. Well, arena football is a way faster game. There's 8 guys on the field, basically on a hockey rink. And it's just fast paced, man. A lot of deep passes. If you like passing, you're going to love the Arena Football League because 90% of it is passing. And so it passes almost every play. And it's just short yardage, and you're trying to just run a quarterback sneak or something. Usually it's a lot of passing and a lot of sacks, with that. You know, I was a big fan of the Saints back in the 90s whenever they had, Pat Swilling and that crew and the Dome Patrol with Sam Mills and all them. And I loved watching them sack the quarterback. Well, if you like that, you're going to absolutely love arena football because, we got some good guys that are getting after the quarterback, and that's what the whole goal is. They're trying to throw it, we're trying to sack them. So it's a real fast-paced game. I mean, I've seen scores like 73-70, things like that before. So it's a fun game.
So do the quarterbacks run a lot, or is the field like too, constricted for the quarterbacks to do a lot of running? Or is it more you want just a drop-back passer to throw?
I mean, we have a one quarterback for sure that runs very well, Chase Forcade. He played at Nicholls. He's one of the all-time leading passers in college football, Louisiana college football history. Chase was a Nicholls quarterback. He missed going to an SEC school, in my opinion, by a couple of inches. You know how they have those cookie cutter
right
and weights that they go after. But I mean, he was a great quarterback. Played for Rummel High School. And we also got Andre Sale, who's from Arkansas. But quarterbacks can run, but you don't want to run a lot because there is no out of bounds. So when you run by the wall, you're getting smashed into the wall. You can keep the footballs if you're a fan, but you got to throw the players back so you can use them for the next play. So they get smashed into that wall quite often. So I don't think any of our quarterbacks want to roll out into the wall, but it's more of a fast-paced game. We work a lot of five-step drop plays, and I tell the quarterbacks, we always have an underneath safety route. So on your five-step drop, when you hit your second step, if you see the defense bailing, go ahead and take advantage of it. It's just a real fun under center fast-paced game.
Again, we're speaking with Louisiana Voodoo head coach James Shiver. And the Voodoo, it's a 16-team. You tell me when I'm incorrect here. 16-team league, and 8 teams make the playoffs, correct?
Yes, sir. 8 make the playoffs.
Do you have an idea as far as who are these other teams, like who the best teams are, any of that? Or is that going to kind of be a learning process?
Yes, sir. I have an idea. I mean, as a coach, I recruit a lot of these players, and I know who they are. I know where their colleges they came from. I know what they've done in their careers, So I know I have an idea. I mean, Albany, New York is always pretty good. The Orlando Predators are always pretty good. Those two teams will be very good. Orlando's in our division, actually. Texas has a real good team also. They have a good coach that's been around for a long time. He does a good job. So in our division, I would say 3 of the top teams are us, Orlando, and Texas. In the Northern Division, I would say it's Albany, New York. And also Nashville Cats. I don't know if you remember Jim Fisher, the head coach of the Titans for years. He's in the coaching and the ownership of the Nashville Cats. And I play there in Nashville. So that's going to be a good team also. They're in the Northern Division. Out west, Billings, Montana has a real good team, real good coaching staff. One of their head coach was a Hall of Fame arena football guy who one of the all-time leading passers in arena football history. So all those places are going to be pretty good. But for the most part, I think we're definitely a top 8 team.
All right, so tell us about some of the other personnel. I know you have some other players from Louisiana on your roster, and, like, if fans going to go out this Saturday or the following weekend, like, who should be some of the kind of standouts to look for?
Well, I think we signed Thyron Lewis. Thyron Lewis is not a Louisiana guy. He's a California guy, but he is the number 5 all-time leading receiver in arena football history and is a future Hall of Famer. We signed him from the get-go. We also signed a guy named Eric McIntosh from Florida Atlantic. Eric McIntosh is one of the best defensive backs out there. I mean, he's played in every league possible. Eric is was a great pickup. He's a defensive specialist and a superstar. He's going to be our defensive specialist on Saturday. You're going to see him a lot. He's a hitter and a cover guy. On our coaching staff, you're going to see guys like Gabe Northern, played at LSU and played for Buffalo Bills. John Forcade, who was a Saints quarterback, an Ole Miss quarterback. Michael Lewis, Hall of Famer for the New Orleans Saints. You're going to see Damon Mason. Damon won't be there this Saturday. He's our defensive analyst. He lives in Atlanta, watches all of our film every night and gives us, analyzes and gives us advice. But Damon is one on our coaching staff, too. He'll be at home games this season. Damon's a Hall of Famer from UL Lafayette. A lot of local guys, a lot of young coaches that'll be helping us out also. We have a real big coaching staff, but player wise, man, we got Torrey Boyd. Torrey Boyd was the center for the New Orleans Breakers last year in the USFL. I called him a local guy, even though he played his college football at Howard, and he's from Miami and the Bahamas. I mean, so there is a lot of local guys like Kerry Starks that played at UL Monroe. Brian Smith that played at UL Lafayette, wide receiver. Everybody. Hey, Acadiana High and Alabama player Cody Martell, our kicker. So just a lot of great talent. And our number one goal was to pick a lot of local guys. And if we couldn't get a local guy at that position, to go out and get the best guy possible at that position. And I think we met all our goals.
Well, it should be interesting to see how it goes. And so, again, the first game is Saturday. And y'all start at what time?
4:30. It's TV picked it up. So all of our games are on TV, either the NFL Network or else on Gray TV. So it was picked up, and we'll be at 4:30 on Saturday.
4:30 on Saturday. And the quarters are how long? How long do they
get? 15-minute quarters. And it's not a 2-minute warning. There's a 1-minute warning. So, yeah, 15-minute quarters until the last minute of the half and the last minute of the fourth quarter where it's regular time. It's a real fast-paced game. One thing about the arena leagues and people like maybe say like the Savannah Bananas that just came through and things like that, the bigger leagues experiment on how to make the game shorter and faster because people don't like paying attention that long. Attention
right.
Fans don't want to kick in. So our league, it's one of the new things we adopted was the 1-minute warning, and they're trying to speed up the game, not only scoring-wise but also – also time-wise.
All right. Well, we'll hope to get you back on as the season goes on. We appreciate your time, and good luck.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you. Thank you. You too. Again, I'm an old dog that doesn't learn new tricks, but I'm sure there's some very often, but there's some people who I'm sure will be very interested. I mean, I watched when it originally came, like back in the early 90s, I don't even think it was called the Voodoo then. Was it the Knights or something? I don't remember. Well, the New Orleans had a team for like 2 or 3 years in the early 90s when arena football first started. I went and watched a game one time, and that's my extent of it. But, Dawson's watched quite a bit of it and enjoyed it. So we'll see what happens. Good luck to Coach. I did not know he had that history in the league, so that was – very good to know. We'll take a timeout and be back.
Back to the sports talk you not only want, but need. This is ESPN, 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Welcome back. You are listening to ESPN, 1037 Lafayette, 1041 Lake Charles. All right. What is our update so far on our poll question of the day?
Yeah, so dealing with the NBA playoffs, as we mentioned, some teams down 0-2. Everybody's down 0-2, essentially, that's had an opportunity to be, which has been at least somewhat surprising. So we had asked you, who's in the most trouble of the teams that are down 0-2, which is the ones who played last night? 45% going with the Lakers, 30% going with the 76ers, and 25% saying the Magic. So the people are saying the Magic are going to be just fine.
So I was thinking, man, our boy FedEx man was, what a prediction he made. You know, he came on yesterday, said the Lakers, and it looked like he was going to be right until the very end. And now, so wait, I think what we settled on was at least four of the eight were going to win game two, and so far it's 0-3, right?
Right.
So we'll see what happens there. All right, so something else, continuing what we were doing before we talked to Coach Shiver, and again, thanks for Coach Shiver coming on and explaining some of that. It's all very new to me, and it is very interesting. But we left off at right past the Cardinals. The very interesting thing is that something happened yesterday. The Broncos, even before yesterday, I was not convinced that the Broncos are going to be willing to pull the trigger at 12 on a quarterback that they don't have ranked that high. Maybe I'm being totally naive. It's possible. It seems like Casper is as tight-lipped as ever. I mean, you hear all these theories on all these teams. You're not hearing anything coming out of Denver. Like, you're not hearing anything. So I think the quote, draft experts or analysts are more in the dark about what Denver's thinking than anybody else in the first half of the draft. But yesterday, the Broncos traded for Dawson's boy, Zach Wilson. So what does that mean? My first thought was, well, they're just getting him to be a backup, and I think that's what it is. But the more you think about it, I think it could mean that they don't feel like they're going to get a trade worked out, and so they're trying to have as much insurance as possible in case they don't get the quarterback they want, or am I reading too much into this, you think?
I think it means Denver's Super Bowl bound. Get your tickets now. I think it's a basically no risk play for a team that had some high risk plays not work out recently at that position.
Yes.
Similar name on the guy.
Yeah.
With some upside, it's somewhat similar to the Saints signing Jameis. I think it falls into that category. And if you do draft a guy, but let's say it's not a top 10 guy who's maybe not quite polished and you want to play Zach and you let the guy sit, then that's an option. Or if you just want him to be the backup, that's an option. Or maybe you don't like where you fall at the draft at all and you're just going to roll with Wilson for a year and, you know, be evaluating your other options. It just gives them a little bit more flexibility. So I don't think it changes the course of the franchise, but I don't mind the move at all. They didn't really give up anything for him, obviously.
Yeah, and the Jets are paying $5 million of his contract.
Yeah, which is funny. I don't know why the Jets were in such a rush to do that. Although I guess
you just need to move on.
Yeah, it just was enough where it's just let's get him out of the building. But
understand a couple things. One, I think Casper is totally convinced that Nathaniel Hackett is a complete idiot. And he came out and said it, and everyone gave him a rough time about it. But actually, he turned out to be right so far. I mean, it's because the Jets were a disaster last year without Aaron, and I'm not obviously they didn't have their quarterback, but their offense was still a complete clown show like it was the year before. So he obviously thinks, and he's probably right, that he could coach Zach Wilson up better than Nathaniel Hackett could, because he coached Russell Wilson up way better than Nathaniel Hackett did. That's one thing. The other thing is, I don't really believe that they were going to pick a quarterback there anyway. I really don't. Even before that trade, I think if the Broncos pick a quarterback, they're going to somehow trade back into the first round at the end. Because like we covered yesterday, I don't really think anybody's going to pick a quarterback for the rest of the first round unless someone trades back into the first round, which the Giants may very well if they don't trade up for one in the top 10, which I don't know, the Raiders might, but I think the Broncos would be on that list of teams that would do that. So let's say they do that. Then all of a sudden they went from Stenham, who's a pretty good backup. They have Zach Wilson, who you could argue is a pretty good backup. I think Ben DiNucci's a really good third-string quarterback who's still on their roster, and then who would have whoever they traded up, like theoretically Nix or Penix, whoever they like. Most people think Nix. I will not be shocked because of their need for a quarterback, starting quarterback and a future quarterback, but I'd be shocked if they pick Nix at 12. I just don't think they're going to do that, but we will see. Very interesting. Again, they are a huge question mark, and it could very much impact the Saints. I could also see the Broncos picking Brock Bowers. I don't know that Casper would do that, but I could. It would not shock me. All right. Let us head back to the Mike's Marine Hotline. Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water.
Good morning, Mr. Kevin. I finally got the chance to call you. Well, I kind of got the nerve to call you back.
Oh,
I wanted to see you that way.
Oh, it's not nerve. It's just like misery loves company.
That's exactly what it is.
Yes.
That's exactly. Misery loves company.
Oh.
I'm so sick of that, but I'm going to go to the Saints first. If we don't get an offensive lineman, we got some serious problems. I know people say quarterback. I don't think we need one. We're paying a guy a lot of money to be there right now. I think our wide receiver room is good, but we could add somebody else. You know, if Brian Thomas is available, of course, I'm a little biased being an LSU fan. But I think an offensive tackle would be the thing we do. But we need Astros need to win first before we even start talking about the Saints, because we still got time for the Saints. We got a good draft. Hopefully we get a 2017 draft, right? That would be great.
Oh, that'd be tremendous.
We get on the road. That would be amazing. The Astros, I don't even know what to say. I mean, losing leads late in the game, Presley, like you said, what in the world's going on? I have no confidence in Presley. And I don't think
Presley is my number one concern. I said that last week, and it's still by far my number one concern. And number two is not even close to number one. I really think he was slipping last year. He was not as good. He still got it done, but it was more – he got it done by the hair of his chinny chin chin. He was no longer a dominant pitcher at the end of last season. Which I think was part of why they traded for the closer. Now, another part was that they lost all these, you know, back into the bullpen relief guys, and that was just kind of the way they did it. Yeah. So I'm really worried about him. Again, I'm not as worried about Abreu, because I know some people don't agree with me, but if Abreu keeps playing like he is, which is absolutely horrible, there's no way they're going to still be playing him come June. Like, they're going to get
sure.
The Abreu situation is going to take care of itself one way or the other. And let me say this. This is a tricky deal. The worst thing that could happen to the Astros in the Abreu situation is that he hits a little bit. Like, he either needs to start hitting a lot, which means that it was just an early season thing, which Bregman goes through every year, or not at all. Because if he hits a little bit, it might fool him into thinking more hitting is coming, and he might be done.
Yeah, you're right. And look, our $95 million man has given up a run in, I don't know, the last three, four games. I mean – we were beating the Nationals 5-2, I believe, and then we gave up another run in the last inning, the ninth, and it kind of scared me a little bit with him. Hader's not as sharp as he was last year. The last 2 years, he's been good. The year before that, I think he had a rough year. But Abreu, he'll come around. I think he will. He's starting to kind of go to the right side a little bit and trying to hit it.
I hope.
And look, my thing is Bregman right now with runners in scoring position, and McCormick the other day comes up twice with nobody on. Comes up twice with the bases, two people on, one person on, whatever it was, and strikes out or pops up, and then the next time he gets a base hit when nobody's on.
Can't count on Bregman for nothing.
McCormick's struggling too, but I'm a DuBon fan.
Yeah, I'd. I mean, I mean, they're. I just don't think you want to play Dubon at like first base every day because you want to play him in center field, because I don't want to ever see Jake Mars play baseball ever.
Jake, what is he doing? I don't even know which way he goes up there. He bats like I would, first of all. He stands, and that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
And you never know what he's going to do, but his defense is really good, though, Mr. Kevin. His defense is good.
He's so stiff. I just hate stiff baseball players. But anyway.
Yes. You're right.
I don't even know half the time if he knows he's playing baseball. Like that guy.
He looks a little confused on his face.
Oh, he's just so clueless. All right. Well, hang in there. By the way, we got a game tonight. Tomorrow, if you didn't hear, Spencer Arrighetti's pitching. Now Javier's hurt. So it's like it never ends. And then they play Thursday afternoon, which is great for me because I don't need the Astros going on while the draft is going on. I got enough going. But I appreciate the call. Thank you, sir. We'll be back.
Helping you get through your workday. This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Welcome back. You're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette, 1041 Lake Charles. We've been telling you for the last month or so, I'm counting down the days to the draft, but Miss Carly's been counting down the days to Festival International. My question for you is, the preparation is probably crazy, so you don't get to sleep, or have you gotten some sleep before this weekend, because you're probably not going to sleep at all this weekend?
I've been getting a bit of sleep. My early mornings really kick off later this week. So for me, during the week's kind of strange, and then the weekend, I get to have the best time.
All right. So tell us, it's tomorrow. Like, we've been waiting and waiting and waiting, so it's here. So what do people need to know that if they've been, last minute plans or maybe they could still help? What do they need to know?
So we take pride in our mobile app and our website because you can find any information you could possibly need to know to have your best fest over at festivalinternational.org or with the mobile app. So anything you need to know is in there. You can build your music schedule, check out the vendors for food and art, volunteer, link up your payment wristband. You can pretty much do anything in that mobile app.
And you can still volunteer?
You can volunteer all the way up to the Sunday of festival. You could even just show up at the volunteer tent. So we're always accepting volunteers. We have to fill 2,500 shifts. So,
all right. So we joked about this the first time you in 3 weeks ago, whenever that was. Now that we're here, who's in charge of weather and how are they doing?
They're doing a really, really great job. Knock on wood. We got some sunshine. We don't see any rain. It's going to get a little warm this weekend, but, sunshine is the festival vibe. So we're very excited about that. And KTC, I guess we can thank our weather guys over there. That's our mobile app weather peeps.
All right. So tell people again, if they've been kind of under a rock and have it, sure. When it starts, and then you have a special guest. Tell us who that is.
Yes, we do have a very special guest. So festival takes place Wednesday through Sunday, and that's packed with all kinds of good music. Tomorrow night we kick off with some Cajun and Zydeco music, but each day more stages open, and that includes SIN LUS International. And international means bands from all over the world, and we couldn't do that without our friends and partners over at LUS, like Miss Heidi here.
All right, so tell us, Heidi,
what's it like?
I'm sure you're excited.
I am excited. So actually, there's a group of us that volunteer every year, so we're looking forward to our shift on Saturday. But behind the scenes, we pride ourselves on giving high-quality services to our customers, but that also entails giving back to the community. So we like partnering with festival because it celebrates our culture. My director likes to say we're like a gumbo over here. Each ingredient on its own is awesome, but all together it's even better, and we believe that the festival celebrates that.
All right, so, and you've already hit some of the but what role do y'all actually play in what she was saying to get these great international?
So we just partner however festival needs us to. We hang up banners all around the parks to just create some excitement for the weeks leading up, and whatever Candace or Carly calls and says, hey, we need help with, we're there to help.
You don't get no very often then.
Me?
Yeah.
You know, everyone loves festivals so much that we get a lot of yeses. That's a fun way to put it.
Yeah.
And we have so many volunteers as well that come out and they use their vacation days to help us. Those are the real champions out there. Our volunteers and our sponsors literally help us put on this event and keep it free for our people.
All right. So before we let you go, one last time, let everybody know what they need to know if they haven't gotten involved, and if they have already planned to get involved, what do they need to know?
So be sure to show your support to local businesses. Say thank you to your volunteers and sponsors. Have a blast. Have a good time. Be safe. And anything else that you would like to know in terms of scheduling, hours, the shuttle schedule, all that good stuff is at festivalinternational.org and in the Festival International mobile app. And we'll see y'all April 24th through the 28th.
All right. Thank y'all very
Merci.
Much.
Merci. Bon
All right, we'll take a timeout and be back.
You're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, your home for the best local sports talk in Southwest Louisiana.
Welcome back. You are listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette, 1041 Lake Charles. All right, we got some more news yesterday. We've kind of been waiting to see what was going to happen with the Cajun men's basketball program. And we found out that Joe Charles had left for McNeese several weeks ago. And yesterday we got news via Twitter that Kobe Julian was heading to Arkansas State. It's a crazy time, obviously, in college athletics. There's all kind of comments to make about it. You know, there are many opinions on it. One of them is I'm not surprised that Kobe did not find a Power Five position and go to a higher level. Not surprised by that at all, because again, he's got an injury history. He is still an iffy three-point shooter. Like, I think, you know, he didn't hardly make any three-pointer shots down the stretch. Because of his injury history, he doesn't have, like, quickness. He doesn't really rebound much. And because of his injury history, doesn't defend much. So he's I love watching Kobe play because his ability to finish shots near the rim and use the backboard is something you don't see a lot anymore. So I really enjoyed watching him play. But again, he doesn't rebound, not a plus defender because he doesn't have that quickness. Not, you know, I guess you could say he's an average three-point shooter, but an average three-point shooter at best. And down the stretch, he was really a below-average three-point shooter. And so he has the ability to score near the basket, no question, and create his own shot at this level. But I don't know that he could do it at the next level. So not surprised at all that Kobe did not go to a Power Five. The fact that he went to Arkansas State is probably very upsetting to a lot of people. I get that. But again, I personally would be way more upset. I'd have been more upset with that 10 years ago. Like now, the James Madison quarterback went to Texas State. I mean, Texas State, they had their first winning season in like 13 years last year. For that matter, Arkansas State made it to the conference tournament finals for the first time in 10 years last year. Now, they have a new coach. They had an exciting team at the end. They did. They have an exciting team. I don't know where he's going to fit into all that. I don't know. The other thing that I want to comment about it is Kobe's been here for 6 years. Understand how many players in the history of NCAA athletics would still have any college eligibility after 6 years. Not very many, only because of the COVID era is he even still available. And just think about this. How many players in the history of college athletics who, after being at a place 6 years, if they had the ability to go someone else, would take it just to try? Look at all these graduate transfers. It's the same concept. Like, you've been someplace 6 years. You just want some people, the grass is greener. They want to go try something. Now, again, all of those thoughts are floating around my head. If you hate Bob Marlin, I get it. It would not matter. Like, it wouldn't matter if he brought in Lou Alcindor in his prime. You would hate Bob Marlin and you don't want – I get it. That's fine. I'm not – saying you have a wrong opinion, I addressed this last week when someone called. There are many people that think Coach Marlin's been here too long and it's time for him to go. I'm not arguing with that opinion. I'm not saying that opinion is wrong. I'm just saying I'm not as strong as that group on that opinion because I happen to believe that the last 3 years were his best 3 years. You say, well, he shouldn't have even been here. Okay, I'm not arguing that. I'm not really disagreeing with you. I'm just saying I think his last 3 years or his best 3 years since he's been here because they're 7-2 in the conference tournament in that stretch, and they've done a good job of developing players. Now you say, well, yeah, but a lot of those players are going. That's true. So what's left? That's the next question. What's left? What do they do now, the Cajuns? I think they have a pretty obvious replacement for Kobe Julian. A lot of people forget that Chancellor White signed to be a really good scorer. At any other time in the history of the program, Kobe would have been gone, and it would be Chancellor White's turn to prove that he can score. He's a big guard that came here with the ability to score, to be a scorer. I mean, again, in any other era in the program's history, that would have already happened. Kobe would be gone, and it would be Chancellor White's turn. So I don't personally think that's the end of the world because that's what normally was going to be happening anyway. And we'll see what Chancellor White can do. I think the real key moving on here, and I can't believe I'm saying this after the way he looked after the first five games of last season, if Hosanna Tekinge stays, I think they'll be fine. If he goes too, which I haven't heard that Hosanna's gone, but I haven't heard that he's staying. We'll wait and see. He's not in the portal as far as I know, so that's got to be a good sign. If he stays, they'll be fine, I think, because the three freshmen they had last year all looked pretty promising to me. I was very encouraged at different times what each one of them did, and they all got a lot of playing time down the stretch due to the lack of depth. They also got a 6'8". Transfer from Sacramento State in Duncan Powell. So, I mean, I don't know how much Duncan can score. I don't know. We'll see. I didn't think Hosanna would score. I really didn't. He scored way more. He scored more for the Cajuns than he did at junior college, which hardly ever happens for big guys. Again, part of that development that I was talking about. We'll see what Duncan Powell does. They also signed a 6'8 power forward out of Shreveport named Jeremiah Evans, who was a 4-star by ESPN and a 3-star by, you know, other rivals in 247 and such. So I've never seen him play. We'll see how he does. And I got to believe they're going to bring in at least one other player. Plus, we say, well, they lost Themis too. Well, look, Themis Folks was gone. Themis Folks, by about midway through conference last year, the conference had figured out how to defend Themis. I don't even know if you're a Cajun fan that you really wanted Themis to be back. Because, again, if you watch the games, the Sun Belt had figured out how to defend him. He wasn't doing a lot of good. It was he almost left last year. To me, that's not in the equation. Again, if you hate Bob and you want him gone, that's fine. I'm not saying you're wrong, like I've said over it. I'm just not addressing that quite right now. Unless someone calls, I'll address it. So what I'm saying is I think the biggest thing they're missing here is everything that Joe did that's other than scoring. Like Joe, I think, was an average scorer. At times, he could be better than an average scorer. He was an average scorer at best, but he was a way above average defender and rebounder. So, and plus the energy that he brought. I think the main thing, if you're a Cajun fan and you don't, you know, hate Coach Marlin and you haven't thrown up your hands and you're just analyzing what's left, I think the biggest thing they're going to really have trouble replacing is everything that Joe brought to the game other than scoring. But I think everything else is very easily to replace and very possibly will be replaced as long as Chancellor is as good as they thought he was and as long as they remain healthy. All right, let's go to the Mike's Marine hotline. Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I thought you were stalling so you wouldn't have to talk to me.
Oh, no, it was a point that I needed to make.
Look, I just found out last night that the Denver Nuggets had won the NBA Finals last year. I had no clue. I don't watch that no more. Once Tim Duncan retired, I shut that off. I have no idea. The Pelicans could have won. Well, I probably would have known if the Pelicans would have won the NBA title, but I have no clue that the Denver Nuggets won the NBA title. Wow. Before I get to the draft, you think our starting pitching's okay with the Cajuns? We're not gonna fall apart just because we took some licks from Coach.
No, I don't think so. Now, you know, Coach Deggs did mention he didn't seem real happy with Carson's. Carson only lasted an inning and a third, but his inning and a third wasn't any worse than Andrew's inning and a third. It wasn't any worse than Morgan's first inning and a third. So I don't know. I don't think there's much to worry about there yet. No.
All right. Now to the draft. Now you say just don't draft the bus. But Kevin, you don't know that. I mean, I texted you. Brock Bowers could fall to us, and we take Brock Bowers. Brock Bowers could be a bust. We don't know that when we draft them.
Yeah, but it's their job to look for years and for decades. They almost every time they drafted a guy on the line of scrimmage in the first round, they hit on it. Well, the last 3 or 4 years, they haven't hit on anybody they drafted. So their model is obviously messed up. So don't mess up. Fix it.
Well, I'm just saying, even if somebody would happen to fall to us, there's no guarantee. Then that guy could be. I mean, could,
I agree.
Know, he ain't gonna fall apart. He's even look. He shoot. Didn't he go like? Never mind. I ain't going there. I didn't ruin my day by bringing up that name. But I will say this: by far, my favorite moment of the draft, and I've been watching the draft all the way back to like 90 or 91. 1990 nothing to do with the Saints. 1995, when the cheaters traded up to take J.J. Stokes. And that fat 49-11 pig started going crazy because they thought they had the next Jerry Rice.
Yes,
well,
that
you
was
know
nice.
It, Chris Berman,
yes.
You were wrong, and you're wrong today as well. Have a good day.
All right. Yeah, we'll get into on Thursday. We'll bring up some draft Saint memories, but tomorrow we'll be talking lots of Cajuns. By the way, tonight, Cajun softball, speaking of the Cajuns, play LSU. Say it's sold out. And so it should be a great atmosphere. We'll see how the Cajuns perform. Coach Glasgow hinted yesterday that, and he could change his mind, certainly, hinted yesterday that Sam Landry is going to start the game. She pitched 2 shutout innings in relief against LSU last week in Baton Rouge. We'll see how she does. They're going to have to play defense. They're going to have to get more hits with runners in scoring position. They're going to have to get more base runners. So we'll see what they do. Should be a fun atmosphere tonight for sure. And the Cajuns normally, when they beat LSU, it's in Baton Rouge. We'll see if they can do it in Lafayette tonight. All right. Y'all have a good evening.